helping you make informed decisions for your life. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well. Their father's health did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams. The one they pick, the one you know by.
Welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education, with your hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. This program will give parents and educators the skills and methods to effectively advocate for children today. And now, here's Rich and Michelle.
Hello and welcome to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education. My name is Michelle Davis, and I'm here with Rich Weinfeld, my co-host, and today Rich and I are talking about an extraordinarily hot topic, autism and autism spectrum-related disorders. But before we get to that show description, let me tell you about overall our philosophy in doing this show. Rich and I believe that with high expectations and an education system that works, all children can achieve. And our show is dedicated to exploring issues in schools that can make the difference between what we are and what we could be as a society. This show is for educators, it's for parents, and it's for students. It's for anyone who has a stake in anyone being educated, which we believe are quite a lot of people. If you're an educator, listening to the show will advance your skills and knowledge and help you participate more effectively in your education community. And if you're a parent or a child, this show is designed to give you the knowledge, tools, and skills in order to effectively advocate for your child or your own needs. And today is about autism and autism spectrum disorders or autism-related disorders. And it's just amazing, Rich. The incidence of autism has really been called an epidemic at this point. As many as 1 out of 250 students are now being identified with Asperger's syndrome, and at least 1 in 150 children, which is a lot of children, will be diagnosed with an autism spectrum-related disorder this year. And amazingly, up to 1.5 million people in the U.S. are currently diagnosed. The cost is now at $90 billion, but it's projected to reach possibly $200 to $400 billion in the next 10 years to serve people with these conditions. Can children with autism be successfully included in our classrooms? What will it take to ensure success for kids with Asperger's syndrome and other pervasive developmental disorders? And are today's public schools up to the challenge? We know that children are our best natural resource, and together we're going to teach them well and create an education system that works for them. Today we have with us an expert, a nationally known expert in this area, Dr. Brenda Miles, and she is a world-renowned researcher, author, and speaker about autism. Rich, were you going to introduce our special guest speaking about autism today?
It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Brenda Smith-Miles. She is currently a member of the Ziggurat Group, and the Ziggurat Group is a group that does training, assessment, and comprehensive planning for individuals with autism spectrum disorders, and we'll want to ask Brenda more about her work with that group in a few minutes. Brenda was formerly an associate professor in the Department of Special Education at the University of Kansas, where she directed a graduate program in Asperger's syndrome and autism. She was the recipient of the 2004 Autism Society of America's Outstanding Professional Award and the 2006 Princeton Fellowship Award, numerous other awards as well. She has written numerous articles and books on Asperger's syndrome and autism, including Asperger's Syndrome and Difficult Moments, Practical Solutions for Tantrums, Rage, and Meltdowns, and Asperger's Syndrome in Adolescence, Practical Solutions for School Success. Again, the list of her books and her contributions to other folks' books goes on and on and on. She's also the winner of the Autism Society of America's Outstanding Literary Work. She's made over 500 presentations, and I think I'm probably reading from a little bit of an older biography, so it's probably in the thousands by now, but she makes presentations not only all over the United States, but all over the world, and she's written more than 150 articles and books on autism and Asperger's syndrome.
Wow.
Several of her books have been translated into foreign languages. She's received millions of dollars in grants to support the education of students on the autism spectrum. She's on the executive board of several organizations, including Organization for Autism Research, and she was acknowledged by University of Texas in Austin as, and this cracks me up, the second most productive applied researcher in Asperger's syndrome in the world from 1997 to 2004. I say it cracks me up because it's hard to imagine anybody being more active. But she may have eclipsed that second most active by now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Brenda, Dr. Steve Silverman and I wrote a book called School Success for Kids with Asperger's Syndrome, and I want to say as we did our due diligence and thoroughly researched our book, your name just comes up over and over and over again, and it was provided us with such a strong foundation and background for the work we did. And it's just a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Well, I am absolutely delighted to have the opportunity to talk with you. And first of all, let me say your book is absolutely marvelous. And it's wonderful that we share. Well, it is. And we share the same philosophy, basically, that children and youth on the autism spectrum can learn, can be successful, and even more, can make a contribution to society.
Great.
Brenda, before we get started into our questions and more of a dialogue, I want to remind our listeners that we welcome calls for comments or questions, and that call-in number for comments and questions in the area of autism today is 1-866-472-5792, and you can also email us with comments or questions for our guest today, which we'll read aloud, and our email address for comments and questions today is specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. So please call in and email us, and you can join our discussion today. Rich?
We're going to spend a good bit of the show talking about what teachers are likely to see in school, what kind of different issues will be presented by these kids, and more importantly, what are the interventions that we can put in place so that they can be successful. But to give our listeners a little bit of background, we want to spend a little bit of time first talking about, you know, what is autism, what are autism-related disorders, and a little bit of the background of that. And Michelle and I always look at all the news for the week in education, and of course every week there's news about autism and autism-related disorders, and just picked up something from the Detroit Free Press that talks about the University of Michigan getting $7 million to study autism in infants. So people are trying to do more research that will identify issues earlier on. And let me start with that, Brenda. What's the importance of identifying the issues early on, and what might parents look for early on?
Well, the earlier our children and youth are identified, the more quickly we can begin with intervention. And although intervention is effective throughout the life of an individual on the spectrum, the earlier you get started, the better. Mm-hmm. There's actually some instruments out there that can identify children and youth on the spectrum quite early, from like 18 months to 2 years. And one of the instruments is called the CHAT, and basically asks questions such as, you know, does your child point? Does your child look at you when you speak to them? Do they share interest with you, such as if you say, look at that, does the child look? Because basically what you're looking at for our very, very young children is in that social interaction. Are they aware of other people in the environment? Are they interested in other things that are going on? Because quite often our very young children with autism don't have that interest.
Just a quick follow-up on that. I want to make sure I'm hearing CHAT, C-H-A-T, as in Tom.
Yes, exactly.
And who would administer that?
Well, actually, it's a screening instrument that a physician, a nurse, someone in early intervention could very quickly administer by asking a parent. And, you know, if a number of the questions are answered positively, meaning, you know, the child doesn't have these skills, a referral can be made to a multidisciplinary team, a school team, to a clinical psychologist or psychiatrist. Schools can identify children and youth with autism spectrum disorders, and that's an avenue that's open to all parents.
And I'd like to just emphasize that what you're saying, it really does apply to children ages 0 to 2. There are federal laws that require the school districts to find those children and to serve them if necessary. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm looking at a mobile autism family clinic article, and it's out of today's Miami Times. And it's a mobile unit that the University of Miami is sponsoring to take its mission out to reach people with children with possible autism spectrum disorders. And so they'll drive around and do these kinds of diagnostic interviews, I suppose. Wouldn't you imagine that might be one tool that could be used in this type of mobile unit that identifies the problem?
Actually, that was Michael Alessandre's brainchild, and he's from the Center for Autism-Related Disabilities in Miami.
Yes.
And his philosophy, which is an excellent one, is to go out to the public. Because with the prevalence being 1 in 150, and, you know, and as much as people know about autism, when you have a young child, it's quite difficult to be able to reach the resources that you need. So this mobile unit, I think, is something that we all should be looking at.
Brenda, isn't it the case, or tell us a little bit more, is it a sure thing if we take our very young children to specialists or to doctors or do this type of interview, is it a sure thing that the autism or autism spectrum disorder would be identified at that time?
Well, there's no such thing as a sure thing. One of the things we must keep in mind is that many physicians did not receive a lot of education in autism spectrum disorders, and research has shown that parents tend to seek out assistance at least 2 to 3 years before their child is identified by the medical community. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to a great need to further train people, because research shows that for kids who are higher functioning, that the search is even longer.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are autism falls within, technically, if you use the Diagnostic Statistical Manual 4th edition, it falls within the 5 pervasive developmental disorders. And, we know that childhood disintegrative disorder and Rett's disorder are characterized by, quite a lot of intensive needs. And generally speaking, kids who are identified with those two conditions would likely not be educated in comprehensive schools. But then there's the pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, the Asperger's disorder, and the autism. Can you start to talk before we go to break, or actually, we might have to actually have you start talking about that now and finish up when we come back from break.
I think we should probably go to break and then have Brenda address that right when we come back. We look forward to your calls and emails, and we'll be back after a break.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators educators. Do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with me, Michelle Davis, and my co-host, Rich Weinfeld. And we're here today with our world-renowned expert in autism, Dr. Brenda Miles. And Brenda, before we took our break, we were talking about the many faces of autism. Would you like to help us to understand, you know, some of the distinctions in terms of the characteristics that we might look for and the different terminologies that people use nowadays to describe this?
Well, one of the things that we must keep in mind, as Stephen Shore says, when you've seen one person with autism, you've seen one person with autism. Mm-hmm. And so each person is going to look a little bit different. But some of the challenges that we see are in the social area, meaning that our folks on the spectrum quite often don't understand that whole realm of social interactions. They don't understand give and take in conversation. They don't understand eye contact. They don't understand gesture. They don't understand posture. Quite often when they engage in conversations, they engage in conversations based upon their special interests without understanding that a conversation actually should be a sharing of enjoyment, if you will. Another characteristic that you often see are restricted and repetitive patterns of behavior, which means for folks who are higher functioning, you may see special interests. And so you may see someone who, if you give them your birthday, can tell you what day of the week it occurred on. Someone else might know all the sports statistics in baseball. Someone might know how to manufacture can openers at age 6. Other kids may have stereotype behaviors, which means that they may rock back and forth or flap their hands or twist their bodies. In addition, we have our kids who have sensory issues. I know a child who told me he could hear the wings of a butterfly flap. Now, if you can hear that, what else are you hearing? Mm-hmm. Some of our kids are tactile defensive. They can't stand to be touched. Our children also quite often have trouble with what we call regulation, which means that, first of all, they can't detect when they're getting upset or overly excited, and secondly, they don't know how to calm themselves down. Would you like me to go on?
Sure.
Okay. Many of our children with classic autism actually may not be verbal. Folks with Asperger syndrome, however, almost always are verbal and may have better vocabularies than you and I. Mm-hmm. However, just because they understand words doesn't mean that they have good comprehension of language. Cognitively, our folks with Asperger syndrome have an IQ in the average range, with 20% having IQs in the superior to very superior range. Mm-hmm. Individuals with classic autism quite often will have a cognitive disability or have an IQ that's considered to be in the mentally retarded range.
Very clear, very clear. You know, I just am thinking of all the many kids that I've worked with over the years and, you know, how much I know about making cheese and the various types of cheeses or the various types of clouds or the various types of engineering devices used to make commercial aircraft. That's often the case. I think that Brenda, you talk about a hidden curriculum, and you know, can you talk a little bit about what you mean when we say the hidden curriculum? When I think of it, I think of there are things that we teach in school, the curriculum, the science, the social studies, but then there are the other things that we don't get directly taught, like how to pay attention or how to look like we're paying attention or how to interact with a group. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. The hidden curriculum basically is unwritten rules, things that everyone knows but no one was taught. There are things that Hans Asperger called the seemingly obvious. For individuals on the spectrum, however, that information is not obvious. Quite often the hidden curriculum is recognized after a mistake has been made. So if you've been with someone on the spectrum and you've thought something like, I have never had to teach this to anyone before, or I thought everyone knew that, or I assumed that everyone knew what to do in this situation. You're talking about the hidden curriculum. And just because it's not taught doesn't mean that it's not important. Because, in fact, some of the hidden curriculum items are more important than some of the academic content that we are taught in schools.
And, Brenda, in addition to the hidden curriculum that goes on in every single classroom where students have to figure out what are the teacher's rules about turning in homework, about chewing gum, about do I have to raise my hand or not, and you know, hundreds of other things. I recently heard you speak, and you talked about the hidden curriculum of the restroom, and I'd love to hear you share that with our listeners.
Sure. The hidden curriculum of the restroom is pretty tricky because the hidden curriculum for women differs so much from the hidden curriculum for men's restrooms, and the majority of instruction for individuals on the spectrum who are boys comes from women. And we as women may act like we understand the hidden curriculum for the restroom, but we don't. For example, for women, restrooms are a social occasion. We go in groups. We talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And even if we don't know each other in the bathroom, we can make comments and carry on a conversation. If we as women or girls go into a bathroom stall and there's no toilet paper, we ask the person next to us, even if we don't know that person, and that person will roll some toilet paper up on her hand and pass it under. Now, we as women take for granted that that's what everyone does in the bathroom, but
that's what I thought.
Men, as Rich can tell you, first of all, don't go to the bathroom in groups, and that's pretty much a given. We all understand that. But what women don't usually understand is that in the bathroom, men do not talk to each other, and in fact, they don't look at each other, and they do not even acknowledge that each other is in the bathroom. And if they go into a stall and there's no toilet paper, they won't ask. Peter Gerhardt, who's a good friend of mine, said that if he were in a bathroom stall and a man asked him for toilet paper, that he would raise his legs up and pretend like he wasn't there. Because it's just not done. Well, the important thing about that is the skill set. We have to teach girls with autism, you know, if you're going to the bathroom, make sure someone is there. We have to teach boys, you know, if you go to the bathroom, check for toilet paper first. Now, there's also another issue related to the curriculum, and that has to do with urinals. And there is a set of rules associated with urinals that all guys know, even though they perhaps have not thought of it as such, and most women do not. That is, there are five urinals. Urinal one is nearest the door. The first guy that goes in should go to urinal five. Okay, the next guy who goes in should go to urinal one closest to the door or urinal three in the middle. We as educators have spent our lifetime telling our kids to line up sequentially. And if they are lining up to go to music or recess or even at the grocery store and they're standing far away from someone, we will actually say move closer. So our boys on the spectrum going into the bathroom, and we have to keep in mind that for our kids on the spectrum, there comes a point in time where they can no longer go into the women's bathroom, at a mall, at a movie theater, even in school.
And it's so funny that you use this as an example. I am working with a very gifted, superiorly bright student right now who I did an observation for, and in the bathroom what he does is make sure that everyone's following his rules about how much water should be used, how many times they should pull the toilet paper, and clearly this is not going over well with the other students. One of the flags that I listen to when I talk to teachers is when a teacher will tell me that a child is a rule enforcer, because they've overlearned or have learned the rules that we as teachers have been teaching, and then they're stringently applied or over-applied. Is that what we're pretty much saying here?
Absolutely. Our folks do not understand moderation, and they think if there is a rule, it's an absolute. And if there are no rules from the perspective of an individual on the spectrum, there's chaos. And one of the things that our folks need in order to be comfortable and understand what's going on is predictability. And so these rules are a way of ensuring that the world makes sense.
Right. I have another article in front of me. It's from the Inquirer in Cincinnati, and it talks about a young man by the name of Aaron Snook, who just graduated as the valedictorian of his class, took advanced calculus, where his teacher said, he challenged my brain. He had new ways of looking at things, so I had to be thinking all the time. This young man also has Asperger's, and he says the number one thing to know about Asperger's is that it is, most of all, a disorder in social interaction. I can't read other people's body language very well or any of their more subtle forms of communication. It does make understanding your peers very difficult, so people with Asperger's usually won't have a very wide circle of friends. I thought, again, that was such a good example of, on the one hand, the potential, what he could accomplish. He's off to Carnegie Mellon in the fall. On the other hand, you know, how he still struggles with friendships.
But see, when he goes to Carnegie Mellon, one of the things that would concern me is that the adaptive skills or the daily living skills of our folks is extremely low. How will he be able to survive dorm life?
Right.
What if he goes around to everyone else in the dorm saying, I'm sorry, you can only take a 5-minute shower?
Right.
Well, no, because, you know, that is, you know, that's the thing to do if you're environmentally careful.
Right.
Will he know how to organize his time to study for homework?
And Brenda, I know there are some groups that support kids. Even in a place like Carnegie Mellon, there are groups that take up the social skills piece. And can you speak to that? Are you aware of some of those?
Yes, there are actually some college programs that operate that spend time teaching those social skills and those organizational and daily living skills from things such as, you know, how to do your laundry, how to set up a studying schedule, how to even ask a professor if you don't understand an assignment, how to relate to other students in the classroom. And quite often, those are the very keys to success.
Brenda, when we come back, and for our listeners, we're going to talk a little bit about a legal precedent for making sure that a child's individualized education program should address areas other than academics, such as this hidden curriculum that we're talking about. Thanks for listening, and come on back after the break. We'll be talking more about autism.
Your life, your health, your network. Voice America Health and Wellness.
How can we be powerful advocates for the children in our lives? How do we ensure that they're getting the best education possible? The Special Needs Advocacy Training Institute prepares parents and educators to be outstanding advocates for school success. The Training Institute is based on Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis's Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book. The book is comprehensive, practical, and easy to read. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn more about this dynamic training opportunity. Parents, are you concerned with your child's progress at school? Educators, do you wish that you could do more for your class? Are you interested in pursuing a career in educational advocacy? At SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com, you'll learn how to make a difference in the lives of children. You will also find information about Rich and Michelle's consulting and advocacy services. Our children need powerful advocates to ensure that they're getting an appropriate education. Visit SpecialNeedsAdvocacyInstitute.com to learn what you can do to more effectively advocate for the children in your life.
Chelsea School has served as a beacon of hope for students with language-based learning disabilities in the Washington, D.C. metro area for over 32 years. It is a college preparatory school serving students grades 5 through 12. Our program model emphasizes literacy remediation, math, science, and technology. For more information, visit our website at www.chelseaschool.edu or call 301-585-1430, extension 303.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Teach your children well.
You're listening to Teach Your Children Well, Hot Topics in Education with hosts Rich Weinfeld and Michelle Davis. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or tip regarding today's topic, give us a call toll-free at 866-472-5792. That number again is 866-472-5792. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Teach Your Children Well. We're here with Dr. Brenda Miles, a world-renowned expert in the field of autism. I'd like to remind our listeners not only to please call in, but also to email us at specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. Again, specialneedsadvocacy@msn.com. I'm Michelle Davis, and my co-host is Rich Weinfeld, and he is also my co-author of our Special Needs Advocacy Resource Book, What You Can Do Now to Advocate for Your Exceptional Child's Education. And on page 121 of our book, we talk about the importance of identifying all children's needs through an individualized education program. We say, quote, "There's sometimes a dispute about whether an IEP should address areas other than academics, such as attendance and behavior. Sometimes school teams either do not find that a child qualifies for an individualized education program, or the schools tell parents that the IEP does not need to address the behavior, such as attendance or social skills or behavior, saying that the behaviors don't negatively impact the child's education. And as common for a child with Asperger's syndrome, for example, she may not have the academic deficiencies, yet she may display poor social or emotional skills. Parents who've challenged this have been successful, as in the case of Mr. and Mrs. I versus the Maine School Administrative District, which was in 2006, which concerned a child with Asperger's syndrome and social-emotional problems. The IEP's contents and goals may span across a child's day and address attendance, social skills, executive functioning skills, coping skills, or adaptive skills. Brenda, can you tell us a little bit about your experience in this area?
Well, quite often I think there is a misunderstanding regarding the needs of children on the spectrum. And sometimes there's a narrow interpretation in that people think if there's academic needs, those should be addressed, but other needs really are not the purview of education. But if you look at IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, what we're supposed to be doing is preparing children and youth for adulthood and independent living. And that clearly goes beyond academics. And that means our children with average to above average IQs on the autism spectrum need to have their needs addressed.
Thank you. we agree, of course, 100%. When I was writing the School Success for Kids with Asperger's Syndrome book with Steve Silverman, you pointed me toward Sue Klingshern in Medina City School District in Ohio, who has a wonderful program where she supports kids who are out in mainstream classes the majority of the school day, but supports them more with the areas of social skills and navigating the school environment. And I know, Brenda, could you talk a little bit about that model, and is it appropriate for all kids? How do we decide which kids it is appropriate for?
Well, I don't think there's one model that's appropriate for all kids. We have to look at each individual child's needs and structure an education program so that they are successful. I mean, there are some children who have such a high degree of anxiety that merely venturing outside the classroom is not something they can do at a given point in time. And they may need more supports and an environment that is a bit more structured and less varied until that anxiety kind of dissipates and until they learn coping skills. There are other children who can be in the in an inclusionary setting all day, sometimes with minor supports. Sue's program in Ohio is wonderful in that what she has done is she's looked at each individual child and determined what they need to be successful, and that is provided. Some of the kids need social support. Some need organizational supports. Some need academic supports. And so sometimes there will be support in a general education classroom. Some of the classes may be in a more self-contained setting. And I think therein lies the success, and that is matching the child's underlying characteristics to interventions.
We're seeing nationwide more and more of a move towards inclusion, which certainly we support for many kids for many reasons, but Michelle and I believe that there are always going to be some kids, as you just suggested in your answer, some kids who are not ready at this moment for inclusion. And I think part of the problem with kids on the spectrum is that if they're not in the inclusive setting, there may not be an appropriate separate setting for them. They may be a classroom environment with students with emotional disturbance or students who have limited cognitive ability. And I wonder if you could just address that a little bit.
Well, one of the things that parents in particular need to understand, and that is just because a program is not available does not mean that the child doesn't need a specific program. And not having a program available is not an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Because we in education are charged with meeting the needs of the child. And one of the things that, particularly for kids with Asperger's syndrome, that we need to be concerned with is, for example, if there's not a program available that meets the needs of the child and a decision is made to place the child in a program for children and youth with emotional disturbance, chances are our child is going to learn behaviors that will not serve him or her well, may be bullied, may become anxious, may not be academically challenged. And in that placement, it may cause more harm than good. And so, as educators, we need to look at what the child needs and provide that.
No, go ahead.
Also, placing a child with Asperger's syndrome in a classroom with children with cognitive disabilities may not best serve that child either. And that decision really has to be made on a case-by-case basis.
I think that you're talking a little bit about the question that I have, which is around categorical versus non-categorical programming for students with autism-related disorders, such as, you know, if the students are going to be in a separate classroom, is it a good idea, and how do we know, to have similarly profiled students together? I've been cognizant of recent research that talks about social validity and how important it is for students with autism-related disorders to be in a classroom where their peer group will support the type of social skills practice that they're doing. Do you have any comment about that?
Certainly. When we're looking at social skills development, one of the things that we want to make sure is that our kids have a time to practice. And quite often that practice should occur with peers who can be good models. And so as much as a child is able to do, placing him in social opportunities to allow him to generalize skills is very, very desirable. Regarding categorical education, I think that we shouldn't be really looking at labels per se, but looking at needs.
Absolutely.
And because the needs are basically going to tell us what we need to be programming for. And, I mean, because a term such as autism or Asperger's syndrome at face value doesn't really even tell you what are the child's social needs, what are his needs for structure, what are his needs for reinforcement. It's only by looking at those individual needs and parceling them out that we can begin to program effectively.
Brenda, I think that's a nice segue into a couple of things. One, in Steve, in my book, we identified a big ten of issues that teachers are likely to see in the classroom, and number one by far are these social issues. I want to focus on the social issues, but you were talking about we really need to know what the needs of the specific student are, and I know you're involved now as one of the leaders in teaching and implementing the Ziggurat model. Can you talk about how the ziggurat model works and specifically maybe using social skills as an example?
Certainly. The ziggurat model was created by Aspe and Grossman, and quite frankly, I think it's one of the three best innovations in autism spectrum disorders that I've seen in the past 15 years. And the philosophy behind the model is, first of all, you need to know what the autism looks like, because for each individual child, the autism looks different. And once we understand the child's underlying characteristics, the next thing we need to do is understand his or her strengths. And that goes beyond the special interest. We need to understand the strengths in all areas, behavior, social, emotional, sensory, motor. And once we have an understanding of the child's strengths and the child's autism, and there are a couple of instruments, one's called the underlying characteristics checklist, and the other is the inventory, or the individual strengths and skills inventory, what we need to do is begin to plan an intervention. And basically with that intervention, you are matching the child's autism-related skills and strengths to interventions. If you don't match the characteristics to interventions, you're going to have a piecemeal program that doesn't generalize. And when you're looking at interventions, the foundation should be sensory and biological issues. So you have to look at what interventions are needed for that sensory system. And 95% of our kids have sensory problems. Yes, sir?
So to bring it to a kind of concrete example, you know, if a student is having social skills issues, how would this model address that? What would you look at? How might you intervene?
Okay. What I would look at are what specifically are his social skill challenges related to autism. Is it because he can't understand somebody else's perspective, which would be theory of mind?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that he's having some communication problems and he doesn't know what to say? Is it that he doesn't understand give and take in conversation? So I would look at his underlying characteristics to say exactly what part of that social is there a problem with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And once I identified what social challenges that individual child had, his underlying characteristics, I would begin to match interventions. And actually, even